Well, hey, everybody, welcome. We are so glad that you're here, whether you're joining us here in the room or you're with us online, getting excited for whatever is ahead for you today. I hear Teddy Bridgewater's playing. That feels like good news, so we can be thankful for that, right? Absolutely. Who would have thought 12 months ago we'd be celebrating Teddy Bridgewater getting the start, but I am actually. Hey, we are finishing a series this weekend called Time Will Tell, and time is that kind of like really the equalizer of all of human life, isn't it? We can have lots of different things, different balances in our accounts, different jobs that we have, different houses that we live in, but time is the equalizer. And we want to talk about not just the legacy that you'll leave someday, but the legacy that you're living today. And we've spent some time over the last few weeks talking about that and what that looks like. We will finish up that conversation today. But before we get started, I'm going to pray for us. And if you've never been here before or never heard me speak, I pray kneeling. And the reason that I do that is because there is a God that actually holds your past, your present, and your future in his hands. And he says that you and I, when we humble ourselves, he'll speak to us. He'll show up in our lives. So wherever you are, online or here in the room, would you just take a moment, humble yourself in your own heart as we talk to God together. God, thank you. Thank you so much that we do get a chance to come before you, that you promise, God, to give us this incredible hope in you if we seek you. And so I pray that right now that's what we would be doing, that even over these few minutes of singing together, that our hearts would be recalibrated, that as we hear from what you have to say, God, from your word, that our hearts would be realigned to you. Would you help us as we spend a few moments doing that? In Jesus' name, amen. So over the last couple weeks, we've been taking a look at kind of the baggage, remember, of our past. And we talked about the checked baggage that we put all the stuff we need to in. And over time, you have to make sure that the bag doesn't get past a weight limit for the plane. And we talked about how do you carry the lessons forward, but not necessarily all the weight of all of that stuff forward. And then last week, Kelsey talked about the personal item that we carry with us in the present to be able to experience what you need in the exact moment. And how careful you have to be about what goes into your personal item, what you carry with you in this exact moment. And I would say if you're just joining us this weekend, I'd encourage you to go check out those messages. You can find them at ehills.org. And then on YouTube and Facebook, we do a daily Bible study throughout the week called Daily Time with God, where we have been studying the book of Esther verse by verse during these same weeks as well. Today, we're gonna talk about the future. And cards on the table, the future is kind of the easiest space and place for me to think about. I think there are things for all of us about our past that we'd rather forget, that we don't want to always have to go back to. And sometimes the present can feel so overwhelming and confusing, but the future seems so hopeful, so full of opportunities and chances for what could be a possibility next. But the carry-on bag is actually my favorite item as well. And the carry-on bag is about what's ahead for us, right? What's immediately in front of whatever we're facing, wherever we're in the middle of in life. And as we think about it, the carry-on bag, I know that last week Kelsey talked about how her personal item is so important to her. Actually, the carry-on bag is all I try to carry. And so even if I'm traveling for a week, I'll kind of jam everything I need into a carry-on bag and I'll like slip my laptop or my iPad into the front pouch so that I don't have to carry anything else with me. I wonder, what do you put in your carry-on bag? Is it clothes for the next few days maybe, or toiletries in those small little containers that hopefully make it through security? Maybe it's shoes that you know that you want on the trip, but you don't wanna have to wear that you're traveling in. You know, the carry-on for us, it helps us stay connected to what's immediately coming up. And in our story, in the book of Esther, in the Old Testament, the Hebrew scriptures, we're gonna see what's coming up for Esther and Mordecai. And what's coming up didn't seem so hopeful. See, God had placed Esther as the queen in Persia, where her Judaism had become a problem with an edict, a decision from the king to kill all the Jews in a one-day genocide. And she's risked her life to change that reality. And God used her for some pretty incredible purposes. Esther introduces us to her thinking about the future in a really important way. She could have let worry and anxiety drive her, be the thing that led her with fear, and we wouldn't have blamed her. And honestly, maybe we feel the same way today about our future, but she chose to dream about what could be instead, about how God would show up, trusting that God, even if all the things ended badly, that God was not away from her, that she would not let the circumstances of her life robber of the joy of dreaming about the future. Which leads me to the question I want you to think about today. Are you dreaming or dreading your future? Because oftentimes the way we answer that question reveals who we think is actually in control of our life. When we're in control of our future, oftentimes we start to dread it. When a politician is in charge of our future, oftentimes we start to dread it. When an employer or circumstances beyond us are in charge of our future, we can start to dread it. But when we realize who God is and trust that he's in charge of our future, then we can start dreaming about it. We're gonna learn three lessons from Esther about how we might do that today, how we finish our series together. And the first one is this: waiting is different than denying. Waiting is different than denying. When my kids ask me for something that they want, they've decided that there is kind of a formula for how they think about this. And so if I say, we'll see, to them that means definitely happening. We're definitely gonna do it, right? Maybe you have the same problem, right? If I say probably not, they know that means definitely not. And while I could like argue with that and maybe be like, well, it's not always true, those two things, like I get it, I understand why they've done that. And I try not to be too harsh because I think we do the same thing to God. I think sometimes in our circumstances, what we can do is when it feels like the circumstances are a wait or a not now, what we hear God saying to us is no. Or even worse, we hear God saying, I don't care about you. And neither one of those answers are true, but oftentimes we have to make sure that we really genuinely trust that God has a bigger and better plan for us, and that actually waiting can sometimes be exactly the right thing. I've been saying this a lot lately that, see, we're playing checkers, but God is always playing chess, and he's infinite moves ahead of you and me. He's been playing since before you were born, and he'll be playing into eternity. And so for us, we can trust him. We can trust him with the circumstances of our life. But the thing that's so hard about the future is that it's not here yet. There seem to be so many different versions available. And in our present moment, it's hard to even consider the future, isn't it? With so many variables between geopolitical tensions and global instability in the supply chain, the ongoing pandemic and various responses to it, and not to mention a heartbreaking loss for the Denver Broncos last week, right? Just the weight of the world, we feel it. It feels all too real that the future might be something that's worth dreading. But we pick up the story of Esther on the heels of the nemesis of the Jewish people, this guy named Haman. We've talked about him like Jafar from Aladdin, finally being brought to justice. Out of ego and hatred, he had used the king to plot the extermination, the genocide of the Jewish people in Persia. And now he'd been killed for it. And our story continues in Esther chapter 8 this way. It says, on that day, King Ahasuerus gave to Queen Esther the house of Haman, the enemy of the Jews. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was to her. And the king took off his signet ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it to Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. Now the king, continuing to see Esther and Mordecai as this really amazingly faithful, useful, full of integrity people, right? Esther is now his queen, has been his queen for more than a decade. Mordecai, he's just found out, is actually her cousin. And he gives them the same kind of authority that he had given to Haman, this guy that was gonna use it for all kinds of bad purposes. And while he used it to try and kill the Jewish people, we're gonna see Esther and Mordecai try to use it to save God's people. But there was a big problem. See, Esther had begged the king, please, would you please rescind the order to commit genocide against the Jewish people. But like we've seen all throughout the book of Esther, every time the king makes an edict, every time the king makes a decision, that is irreversible. And so the idea that he would be able to pull it back, he couldn't do it. And so what he did instead was he said, here, you can have the authority to do something new, but you can't change that. And so what they do is they release an edict that it makes it legal for the Jewish people to plan, prepare, strategize, and defend themselves on this day on the calendar that had previously been assigned for their destruction. As a matter of fact, this is how it reads. It says, then Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal robes of blue and white, with a great golden crown and a robe of fine linen and purple. And the city of Susa shouted and rejoiced. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor. And in every province, remember there's 127 provinces, and in every city, wherever the king's command and his edict reached, there was gladness and joy among the Jews, a feast and a holiday. And many from the peoples of the country declared themselves Jews, for fear of the Jews had fallen on them. If you were with us last week, Kelsey talked about the Jewish people mourning, like actually preparing for their own death. And now, literally, almost overnight, here they are with gladness, excited about that day, because now they have a hope. They have something that they can do about it. Because now, with formal authority and this new edict in place, it was obvious what the will of the king was, what he really wanted. And more than that, the Jewish people could defend themselves. And so the public perception had changed so quickly that now some of the very same people inside of Susa and Persia that were excited to kill the Jewish people, now because of this social change, they were actually pretending to be Jewish for their own safety. That's a pretty big swing. Have you ever seen the guy in the airport who has his carry-on bag and he has sat down in his seat literally moments earlier, and there was something in his carry-on bag that he needed, and he thought, you know when the best time to get this would be? I will wait for the safety instructional demonstration. The thing that, like, we all are just like, can we get past this so that we can take off? And the guy gets up to get something out of his carry-on bag, and the flight attendant, which, by the way, if you are a flight attendant, I am so sorry to you for all the things you have to deal with, and so thankful for you, because I just feel like you have to paint a smile on all the time. It's amazing. And so you'll watch the flight attendant be like, hey, sir, I am so sorry, you're being an idiot. Like, I know that's what you're thinking. And so you, like, are trying to talk the person down. You're like, no, I need my headphones. Like, well, if you needed them that badly, certainly 5 minutes ago, you could have gotten them. And what the flight attendant is not saying is no. The flight attendant is not saying that those noise-canceling headphones that you need, you can't ever have. She's just saying, or he's just saying, please wait a moment before you get them, because you are currently inconveniencing the rest of the plane. See, this idea in that moment, that the difference between not now and no, I think it's easy for us to look at other people in situations like that and be like, how do you not get this? But we don't get this. Our problem with God all the time is that we go, okay, God, just like kids, when God says wait, we just hear no. When God says delay, we're gonna go, oh my goodness. But I just wonder, what are the things in your life right now that feel like no, when really God is actually growing you by asking you to wait for them? Esther and Mordecai had waited for more than a decade for God's faithfulness to show up in a way like no one had ever seen in their generation. What is it in your life that God's asking you to wait on and actually might really be for your good? I remember when we lived in Seattle, we lived there for 8.5 years. We really wanted to buy a house in Seattle. And it turns out, if you think housing prices are expensive in Colorado, go check out Zillow in Seattle. They are really expensive. And so for years, we were constantly looking for the right opportunity to buy a house, and it just never worked out. And we were frustrated. I was frustrated that we're constantly paying rent and moving from rental to rental, and it was annoying. But here's what happened. After 8.5 years, we had been saving money to buy a house. And that money that would have gotten us something really small, we would just wait it in Seattle for, when we moved to Colorado, it was the perfect amount to move into the house that we really wanted to move into. And we didn't know that. I was just frustrated. I was just growing in angst over the course of almost a decade. And God was like, hey, I'm playing chess. Just trust me. Because we didn't know we were going to move to Colorado. We didn't know that that was what was next for us. But God did. And so he was preparing us and preparing the circumstances and preparing our bank account for the one day, someday need that we were going to have. And I don't know what your thing is right now, but I promise you this, God is not ignorant to it. He knows what you need right now, and he knows what's in your future. And you can trust him. You can trust him that whatever you wish you had right now, there's a reason you don't have it. The job that you really hoped that you would have by now, the promotion that you feel like you just got passed over, maybe it's not that it was some sort of great injustice. Maybe the God of the universe knows you're not ready for it, knows that the situation's a mess, and so he's actually waiting for that to get fixed before he puts you in it. Can you trust him with that? Maybe for you, it's a relationship that you really want to see materialize, and God's saying, would you just wait on me? I've got some things to do in you so that you can be the kind of person that can be with that kind of person. Maybe for you, it's an accomplishment that you're hoping to experience. Maybe for you, you just want your kids to finally get it, to finally click, to be able to be independent, to move out of your house, whatever. Like, whatever the thing is, maybe there's something God's doing in you with that. And if we can understand that, if we can understand that delay doesn't mean deny, then all of a sudden this question, are you dreaming or dreading your future? You can start to dream. Because the thing that you really hoped would already happen in your present or in your past, you can trust that God has your future taken care of. And even if it doesn't turn out the way you hoped, it doesn't mean it's not gonna turn out the way you would hope for if you knew what God does. The second lesson we're gonna learn as we finish this story today is our view of the past shapes the future. Not our view of the future, it shapes the future. I wonder, do you have any luggage that you have like a nostalgic relationship with? I know that seems weird if you don't travel a bunch, right? Maybe you don't care very much. But for me, this carry-on, I have like a significant relationship. I don't like snuggle with it or anything, but I'm very thankful for this piece of carry-on luggage. I bought it several years ago, and I did a bunch of research to get exactly the one that I wanted. And not only does it like have all the features that I really hoped it would have, and not only did it hold up pretty well, but it's been on a bunch of trips with me. And so every time that I see this piece of luggage, and every time I load it with the stuff that I need for whatever my next trip is, I have these memories of trips that I've taken with it. And anytime I travel to what's next, it reminds me of where I've been, of the past trips and experiences I've taken. And at its best, that's what our past can do. At our best, our past can remind us of some really good things, but I just wonder for some of you, right? Sometimes because we haven't handled our past very well or we're not showing up in the present, our past actually isn't helping us think about and treasure our future. It's actually just triggering us. So we're gonna talk about from the story what that might look like, because that's exactly how God wants to use the past, that we might treasure who he is in the story of Esther. It says this, finally the day came, the day that Haman, who had conspired to kill the Jews, wasn't even alive to see, and the text is gonna tell us what took place. It says, that very day, the number of those killed in Susa, the citadel, was reported to the king. And the king said to Queen Esther, in Susa, the citadel, the Jews have killed and destroyed 500 men and also the 10 sons of Haman. What then have they done in the rest of the king's provinces? Now, what is your wish? It shall be granted to you. And what further is your request? It shall be fulfilled. And Esther said, if it please the king, let the Jews who are in Susa be allowed tomorrow also to do according to this day's edict. And let the 10 sons of Haman be hanged on the gallows. See, they had defeated the people whose hatred for them had motivated them to try to commit genocide against the Jewish people. 500 people just inside of Susa, just inside the capital. And the king asks Esther, hey, I gave you what you asked for. What else would you like? And Esther's request was to have a second day to be able to eliminate the people that conspired against them, that were working behind the scenes and building the networks to try and exterminate them. And for us, that feels very strange. It violates all sorts of modern sensibilities for us. But you have to realize that for them, it wasn't just one day. There was a group of people that were willing to kill the Jewish people, and then it was gone. This was something that had been building for years and years. That's why Haman could do this. It's because people had a unique hatred towards the Jewish people. And what Esther and Mordecai knew was, if they'd just gone back to business as usual, that those same networks would radicalize more people and that they would be under the same kind of threat very, very quickly. And so in order to change it for a much longer time period, they were asking the ability to actually defend themselves more than just that day. Like I said, feels wild to us, right? I wonder, as you think about kind of your future and traveling and places you've been, do you have a passport? I remember when I first got my passport, I kind of felt like James Bond. But if you don't know this, you can't just walk into an airport with a passport and they let you go anywhere. It's weird. But it's really helpful because it allows you to go to all these places around the world that maybe you've never been or never been exposed to. And every time you look at your passport, you get these stamps in it whenever you go somewhere else, and they become these kind of portals to experiences that you've had around the world, places that feel like different worlds, places that you know are spinning just like us today. And when I look at mine, I can instantly go back in my mind to those trips, especially ministry and missions trips that I've been on, the things that God did through them at that time. And just like a passport, God used moments and memories in the lives of the Jewish people to remind them, not just of what God had done, but really of who God was and still could be, that he could be trusted, not just with what happened in the past, but with their future. As a matter of fact, in Esther 9, it's recorded this way from this moment. It says, and Mordecai, a cousin of Esther, recorded these things and sent letters to all the Jews who were in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus. both near and far, obliging them to keep the 14th day of the month of Adar and also the 15th day of the same year by year, as the days on which the Jews got relief from their enemies, and as the month that had been turned for them from sorrow into gladness and from mourning into a holiday, that they should make them days of feasting and gladness, days for sending gifts of food to one another and gifts to the poor. See, what God had instituted after all this had taken place is what's called the Feast of Purim. And the reason it's called that is because it comes after pur, or dice. And if you've been with us, Haman, remember the nemesis of God's people, the villain in the story, he rolls dice to determine the day on which he would let his edict say that the Jewish people would be killed. And so now this Feast of Purim would take place every year to commemorate the fact that God would turn their destruction into deliverance, that God would give them confidence in his willingness and ability to help them, not just in the past in that, but in the future. I wonder, as you think about your past, right, do you treasure your past or does it trigger you? Can you see where God's shown up? Or do you just see disappointments, disillusionments, frustrations? God actually has shown up in your life whether you realize it or not. And some of you, I think there's some really good things that God's done in your past, but sometimes we dismiss them. They just sort of fade into the ether. Sometimes we forget about them. Sometimes we never even notice them in the first place. And I think part of this, part of honoring what God's done in the past and thinking about how it might apply for the future that we can dream about, is making sure we notice when God shows up in really special ways in our life. And so I wanna give you actually some help, just some really practical ways that you can take areas and ways that God has been faithful to you in the past and mark it so that you can trust that God will be faithful to you in the future. So here are just three things to think about. Number one, write them down. Whenever God shows up in your life, maybe you've been praying about something really specifically, maybe you haven't, and you just go, oh my goodness, that was amazing. My perspective is there are no coincidences. So anything good that happens in your life comes from the hand of God. That's what actually the Bible tells us, that every good and perfect gift in your life comes from God. It's hand-selected for you. And so write that stuff down. Do you have a journal? Do you have a notepad? Whatever you do, a note in your phone, write it down. Number two, make up holidays. Make up holidays and put them in your calendar. The day that you got into that college that you prayed about, that you were like, I don't know if I can get into it, and then God actually got you into that college, and you're like, oh my goodness, God, thank you so much. Put it as an annual calendar event that you might be reminded. For you, maybe that's the day that you were declared cancer-free, and God brought you through the treatment, and you never thought you'd get there, but you can give God credit and be reminded every year on that day. Go out, have dinner together, create some holidays. Maybe that's the day that you thought your marriage was never going to keep going, and what you did was on that day you stepped into a counseling room and you started to get help, and God showed up, and so now that day marks the day that God breathed new life into that relationship. Where are the areas in your life where God has shown up? Wouldn't it be cool if our calendars were just peppered with God's faithfulness every single year? And the number three, create visual reminders. Some of you are very artistic, and so for you, that's gonna be like something really cool in your house, and maybe as you're walking a guest through and showing them your home, you'll get a chance to talk about a picture, a painting, some creative lettering thing that you did about how God showed up. Somebody suggested this week that you put something on the rearview mirror of your car that reminds you of God's faithfulness about a season or a situation in your life. Because not only do you look at it regularly, but the rearview mirror is such a helpful distinguishing reminder, right? That our rearview mirror is important. We need to know what happens behind us, but it's much smaller than our windshield on purpose. We're supposed to spend more time thinking about what's ahead than thinking what's behind. But we should always have as a reference where God has shown up in the past. And I think if we do that, if we can truly believe that how God has shown up in the past and who he's been, he's the same yesterday, today, and he'll be the same forever for you. And then all of a sudden, are you dreaming or dreading your future? Well, it starts to make sense that you can really dream about a future that's in the hands of a God who has been so faithful and kind and generous and consistent with you. And then the third lesson that we're gonna learn as we finish this story together is you can flourish in exile. You can flourish in exile. Now, I wanna just say up front, I don't belong in Texas. Feels like a weird out of context thing to say. And also, I know that there's like a line, like don't mess with Texas, and I'm about to mess with Texas a little bit. But it's less about Texas, it's more about me. Like if you've ever been to Texas, like the trucks that are there that people drive, when they say everything's bigger in Texas, like I think the roads are bigger to fit the trucks that people drive down there. And I did grad school there for 2 years, and I'm tremendously thankful for the people that I met, for the education that I was able to receive, really, truly thankful. But within literally hours of being down there, I just knew I don't think I'm strong enough or cool enough or tough enough to live in Texas. And some of you are like, yeah, we could tell, Phil. Like before you even really said anything, we could. You don't have to laugh when I say stuff like that, but. You know, the thing is, though, there was something that, and to be fair, I get along great with people from Texas. Like, I love people from Texas. Just the state itself is intimidating for me, so I just steer clear, you know? Tex-Mex can get delivered to me. I like that. But the thing that was true about my time in Texas was I was an exile, right? It wasn't home to me. It didn't feel familiar to me, but I had a purpose. I had a calling. I had a specific need to do things while I was there. And so I was there for a couple years to pursue some education, to be able to get it done. And I approached my time there differently, knowing that that was the outcome, knowing that that was the goal, knowing that that was the thing that I was supposed to achieve while I was there, knowing that I wouldn't be there forever. And I want to talk about exile. We're going to talk about it in a few weeks, but I think that this word is really important in our moment because actually we've been exiles as followers of Jesus for thousands of years, but I think in our culture, sometimes we get under this idea that we don't have to be exiles. And what's happening in our culture is we are feeling more and more like exiles the more and more our culture here in America shifts. And I think that's okay. I'll tell you why in just a minute. But before we get there, I want to define exile for you. And it comes from a scholar named Walter Brueggemann, who defines exile this way. He says, the experience of knowing that one is an alien and perhaps even in a hostile environment where the dominant values run counter to one's own. See, after everything that's taken place in our life right now, and when we think about the situation that we're in, we feel that way, don't we? If you're a follower of Jesus, I'm guessing you feel that way kind of more and more every year, more and more every election cycle, more and more every kind of Thanksgiving conversation. You realize that like there is just this drift that's taking place. And in our story, even after everything that was said and done for Esther and Mordecai, they are still in Persia, still living in exile. It wasn't Israel, it wasn't their home, but we get to look at something that's really important in the final verses of the book. In Esther 10, it reads this, King Ahasuerus imposed tax on the land and on the coastlands of the sea and all the acts of his power and might and the full account of the king honor and of the high honor of Mordecai to which the king advanced him. Are they not written in the book of the chronicles of the kings of Media and Persia? For Mordecai, the Jew, was second in rank to King Ahasuerus, and he was great among the Jews and popular with the multitude of his brothers, for he sought the welfare of his people and spoke peace to all his people. See, for the Jews, they were still living in exile in Persia. They were the moral and religious minorities of the culture, but they were thriving because of how God had shown up and used Esther and Mordecai's boldness, willingness, faithfulness, courage to stand in the gap for what was good, to stand in the gap for the good of others. And I wonder, have you ever realized as you kind of travel and you see like, okay, I know I'm going to do something different. I know there's something that's gonna be new in my experience for what's about to come. Have you ever realized when you start to pack your bag that you didn't actually fully unpack it from the last trip that you were in? It's kind of annoying, right? You open it up and you find like, oh, they're like, I was wondering where that shirt had been. Like, I just never unpacked it, you know? Or maybe for you, there's toiletries that you never unpacked or there's sand from your vacation. And so before you have to get ready for what's next, you have to fully clear out what you had just done with that luggage, right? I wonder if you might be doing that with your future right now. I wonder as we think about our own future right now in present reality, how many of us look at our future based on where we've been entirely, not thinking about what might be needed for what's in front of us. See, we need to carry the stuff that we need for what's ahead, not just for where we've been. And over the last 18 months, we've probably gotten that reminder clearer than ever in our life before. See, your future, even in exile, it can be so bright. We're gonna talk about that in a few weeks as a community, but I believe that this carry-on bag is a great picture of packing with enough flexibility to face whatever is in front of you. God promises that he'll be with us, that we can trust him, that even as we become a moral minority in our culture, which, to be clear, we are now the moral minority in America, and it will continue to happen more and more. The next election will not change that. It has been happening for decades, and it will continue. And I don't say that to create some weird culture warrior thing. I'm just telling you that as a follower of Jesus, if you are looking for cultural compatibility with biblical Christianity, you're gonna have to keep looking, because it doesn't exist, and it will continue to drift. But there's something that's, I think, so healthy in that. Even as the choice between what God's calling you to and your own comfort becomes more and more of a contrast. The interesting thing, though, about the church for 2,000 years, the church of Jesus, is that when we've had political power that we've wielded, when we've been the moral authority and the moral majority in a culture, it's actually a time when the church has struggled. It's actually a time when the church becomes complacent. And when you look over the last 2,000 years, and even right now in our moment, at the places where God is showing up and people are meeting Jesus in radical ways and hope and healing is pouring in, it's happening in some of the darkest places around the world, China and Iran and Afghanistan, where you would go, oh my goodness, how could anyone pay the price of what it means to follow Jesus in those places? And they are doing it in droves. And so for us, I know there's grieving involved, especially if you've watched over the course of your lifetime things shift in America. But rather than dreaming for a nostalgia of what was, what if you were to dream about the future that God can use, even in a world that's getting darker and more difficult, that in the darkest days, the light shines the brightest. And that's why God has you here. That's what he's still going to do with you. But I wonder, where do you overly focus in your life? Is it in your past, where you're trying to jam everything in there and everything's a triggering conversation and you've got some stuff that you just can't let go? Is it in your present and you're amazing in the moment, but everything kind of hits you sideways because you're not thinking about what's next? Is it in the future, where you're constantly dreaming and scheming about what could be? I'm guessing that for all of us, we have one of those things that is easy for us to dwell on. And maybe in your job or in your family or in relationships, your ability to do that actually really helps you. But I wonder, are there areas in your life where it hurts you too? Areas where that overemphasis on the past and how easily triggered you can become is exhausting relationally for your family and friends. They want you to get help, so that you aren't constantly throwing something or someone else in their face that they have not done to you. Are you somebody that the present feels so safe because you don't wanna deal with the past, you don't wanna deal with the future, but it's hurting you because there are people in your life that wanna have serious conversations about where you've been or where God's calling you to be? And maybe you're like me, maybe the future is so easy for you, but in the meantime, people in your life are like, I need you to be present right now in this situation, in this moment. If you wanna live a different kind of legacy, even though we're all gonna have one of these that we're probably better at, and one of these we're probably worse at, there's a balance that God can bring. That when we trust him, just like Esther and Mordecai did, we can trust that the same God yesterday, today, and forever can be with us each and every day. I wonder, how can you embrace all of them? Because if you're not careful, you will take your past baggage into the future. I don't know if you ever do this, but sometimes you'll be in your closet, and as you look at all the clothes in your closet, you like pull out a clothing item and you're like, oh, this doesn't fit me anymore. It's too small. And I'm sure it's just because it shrank in the dryer. I'm sure that's what happened. And what you think is, should I donate this? Should I give this away? And then you're like, no, I'm gonna lose the weight. I'm gonna be able to wear it again. And it just sits in our closet. And after a while, we just have stacks and stacks and stacks of stuff that we're carrying into our future. But Eastern Hills, I promise you that in 2021, what fits you in the past is not gonna fit you in the future. And there's some things you need to let go of. We talked about it a couple weeks ago, in order to experience the future that God has for you. And if you'll do it, if you'll trust him with it, you have no idea what he can do. You could actually dream about the future because you can trust him.